Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankara Vavahai Tejasvi
Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 53 of Jaya Prakashaka. The eighth chapter describes how Brahma appears from the lotus in Vishnu's navel, gives up searching, enters samadhi, and then sees the Lord. Maitreya proposed to speak only on Srimad Bhagavatam. Exactly where he gained access to Bhagavatam is described as possible, as follows. From Anantadev, Lord Sankarsana, the subject was inquired of by Chatushana, who instructed Shankyayana Muni. The great sage Shankyayana was the chief among the transcendentalists, and when he was describing the glories of the Lord in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it so happened that Maitreya's spiritual master, Parasara, and Brihaspati both heard him. Sri Maitreya Muni desired to narrate the same as he had heard from his guru. Right? So you have to get this in the parampara. It's not going to come in some other fashion. Right? So it is coming down here. So he wants to speak only on Bhagavatam because the other Puranas have already been heard of by Vidura. And he's already made the comment that he's heard enough of. Not that you meaning that you can hear enough of the scriptures. He means he's heard enough of the narration where you're not fully describing the involvement of the Lord. Right? Because generally, like, let's say, you take the Ayurveda. It discusses what's going on. But the very beginning, the first chapter in that, will discuss about its connection with the Lord. And maybe here and there it will be, but basically through the whole thing it won't make the connection. Because it's already shown the connection. But that means after that, each point that it makes, you have to connect it. Right? But generally speaking, most people don't connect it. Right? You know, you generally see what happens when devotees get seriously into Ayurveda. You know, it's like the sadhana and that disappears. Why? Because they can't see the connection. So Bhagavatam then is how every point is connected. So that's what he wants to hear. So he says he's going to describe Srimad Bhagavatam as it has come down in this parampara. Right? Now one could say, okay, he's always heard it from his guru Parasara and Brihaspati. So then what made the difference? Is that he had studied Bhagavatam, but he hadn't necessarily had the realization of the Bhagavan feature like he did until he heard the discussion between the Lord and Uddhava. Right? In that position, now he realizes what he's heard from his spiritual masters. Yes?
We say that these angas, if not properly connected with the Lord, are actually more like arts rather than sciences?
No, they're sciences. But they're not transcendental sciences. They're aparavidya. Means how you apply them, that's the art, but the knowledge of it is still a science. But the point is it's not transcendental science. That's why it's apara. But you connect it, then you get the transcendental benefit. See, apara, you can either connect it and get the transcendental benefit. If you don't connect it, then technically it's called avidya. That's why you see people can go away from the proper understanding with that same knowledge. But if that same knowledge you're going towards, that's aparavidya. So it's not the knowledge itself. It's taken in the modern time that it's the knowledge itself, it's the technique itself, it's these are the things that really are the substance. No, it's the connection with the Lord is the substance. Because the technique is just like somehow or another came up in a discussion yesterday, and just thought about it this morning. You know, what is it they say? There's a certain percentage of your brain you use. It's only 10% or something. So means 10% is all you require to do whatever anybody does in this world now. So you can become a billionaire using 10% of your brain. Right? So, you know, the pond wall is using a touch less. Right? Does that make sense? So what's the 90% for? That's for understanding God consciousness. Seeing the subtleties and the connections and that. That's why we're not used to these subtleties, because we're only used to using 10% of the brain. You know, now we're being called upon to use a touch more.
And that's like...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can we say that Maitreya was able to realize the picture of Bhagavan only because of the Lord's mercy?
Only because of the Lord's mercy and the association with the advanced Vaishnavas. Right? Just like when you see... Now, Nala Kuvara and Manigriva, now after the Arjuna trees are pulled over... Right? Then they come out, they offer their prayers, and they're talking about how the Lord is you know, great, he's the controller, everything like that, straight philosophy. But at the very end, they mention, therefore, you know, we want to be able to absorb ourselves in the knowledge of how the Lord is pervading everything as the universal form. Right? Because that was the point was made before by Uddhava, is that the residents of Dwarka, they see Krishna as Paramatma. So technically they're seeing the universal form. So then, you know, they're left behind. He leaves behind the universal form. The pastime is finished. Right? So they're not seeing what's beyond that. That's one position. Then the other is that they've mentioned that by the Lord's grace they've come, they've seen him, he's given their blessings and everything like that. But Krishna makes the point it's because he's seen Narad Muni. That's why they're blessed. Because Narad Muni is the one that blessed them because of the blessing of Narad Muni, therefore Krishna is involved in giving his mercy. So the real point is because of the discussion of Uddhava with Krishna, therefore Krishna is giving his mercy to Maitreya. Right? Because there's never a point where we step over the guru. It just doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Because Krishna's guru, but it comes to us through those personal aspects. It means you have the thing, yes, Krishna's guru. So through our guru, then we know. Like that. That's the tattva side of it. But then there's the point of the person. Yes, that has come through this person. Does that make sense? So you have both of the things at once. So the one is, yes, he's representing Krishna. So the point is if you want to know Krishna, you'll always, in some way or another, find that representation. Right? That's why there's a process. Diksha gurus, siksha gurus, you know, and if you're aware, then there's so many gurus. Like the sage that had 22 gurus. And Krishna and Prabhupada and the purport, like that time's not. Okay, but whatever, the acharyas are making the point. No, Krishna makes the point. That someone who's very aware, even their own body becomes guru, because they can just see what happens. You do this, this is the result, and so therefore, you know, there's some laws here. Right, you know, the stomach is this big, I eat this much. You know, there's reactions. You know, so you learn. You know, so
not always.
Yes, that's true.
So this can be abused if you're on the mental platform. You just find, oh, this is guru because he's saying what my mind likes.
Yeah, but you'll get what you want. It's the point is, you want Krishna or you want Maya, because Maya is also representing Krishna. So that way she's also guru.
Very effective.
Yeah, no, she's good. We've all been very committed disciples for a long time, right? So that's the thing, he's proposed he's only going to speak on Bhagavatam because Vidura has made this indication that that's the interest. Right? So then it's not a problem. So, okay. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu lay down in the self-invigorated energy kala for 4,000 yuga cycles within his internal potency. Whilst appearing to sleep in the external energy, the living entities came out, actuated by Kala Shakti, for further development of their fruitive activities, thus rendering his body bluish. The sum total of their karma burst out from his abdomen like the bud of a lotus. Into this lotus, the supersoul entered and impregnated it with the three modes of material nature, setting the scene for the generation of the self-born Lord Brahma. So now we see the difference between that aspect of the universal form on the one, and then, which is that Hiranyagarbha aspect, and then there's the Virat. So the Virat includes the sum total of the karma of the living entities.
Yes.
Right? And then the three modes of nature then are active. Right? Because before that, you don't technically have the modes of nature because they're not part of the 24 elements as such. If you're taking bigger, you're taking, I think the next step is 32 elements. Then you'll get the modes of nature, you'll get, you know, lust, anger, greed, envy, all these different kinds of things, fear of death, all these kind of, they come in the next step. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why is this statement about the bluish body of the Lord?
Blue. You don't like blue. No,
is it...
What is it? Is it sacra blue or something?
Sacra blue.
Yeah, sacra blue.
It's not the same.
Not the same. Not the same. Maybe that's what they're saying. Oh, Krishna. So all those time we thought these pirates were swearing, they were all... This other guy's got more cannons on his ship than me. So.
Is it connected with color Krishna?
Means there's always the element that Krishna's that color because that's just the perfect color. He likes it that way. But in the material world, you always get some reason for it. So they say, why is he blue? He likes blue. You know, no, what's the real reason? You know, no, the real reason is his desire, his feeling in that. But then we get one like this, like that. Right? So the external energy, the living entities came out actuated by Kala Shakti. Right? So they came out to further that, so that makes him blue. Just like, you know, he gets his Sudarshan from, I think, Agni and, you know, all these different things. Then we say, oh, okay, that's how it works. But originally he already was like that. So there'll be some connection between the blue. Because in here, the blue is because it's external energy. Blue represents the mode of ignorance. Right? But on the transcendental platform, the blue represents the complete total of everything. You know what I'm saying? You take all the colors and you mix them, you get blue. Right? Does that make sense? But so that's substance. Now you take energy, light, you mix all the colors of light, you get white. Does that make sense? So that way you get the golden and bluish forms. You know what I'm saying? But that's just for us, because we like the mechanical as science, not that the actual nature of individuals as science, right? You know, that's why when we do okay, means that this is difficult. Like I think even in this chapter... Yeah, it was saying about how it's difficult. Was it here? It was talking about it's difficult to means you can understand the Lord through this process by understanding the universal form and creation, but it's difficult because it's so technical, right? But now, even though it's difficult and it's technical, then slowly we catch it, right? And we do fairly okay. You know, until we come along to these later chapters of Nectar Devotion and Ujjwala Nilamani. And then, even though that's science of rasa, that's just like, you know, that is rocket science. You know what I'm saying? Because we're not used to that there's a science in relationships. It's always just what I feel like. But spontaneity in the mode of ignorance doesn't always work out so good. Right? Is that? Yeah. Yeah. Lord Brahma, unable to see anything in the world while moving his eyes in all directions, achieved four heads as he circumambulated all of space. So here he's getting four heads by just trying to see what's going on in every direction. So he's ending up with four heads. So as he circumambulated all of space, so the amount of space that's there was enough for four heads. Right? So you can imagine they have a bigger universe. As you circumambulate the space and look, then you end up with thousands or millions of heads. So it just means bigger universe. You know, so however many heads it takes to see everything in the universe, that's what. So this is a small one. The lotus was stirred by the airs of devastation, so Brahma contemplates, who am I and where from have I come? Right, so look, stirred by the airs of devastation, so you have the false ego. Right. Entering into the lotus stem, he travels down until he runs out of time, unfortunately unable to trace out the root of existence. Wisely, he retires from searching and concentrates his mind in samadhi on the Supreme for 100 years. Finally, this tactic allowed him to develop knowledge, and he had a vision of the Lord in the heart. This vision expanded to the form of the Lord, which he describes in his Brahma Samhita prayers. Yes?
Why do you find it so fascinating and interesting, all those details, but when we get to the later chapters of Yatra Devotion, we just don't relate?
Because we're not used to what's going on the inside. It's all about the outside. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you have two hand-built cars, okay? You know, based on the thing of all technology and all that, okay? One, it's all about the inside, how it functions, how it works, how it rides, everything like that. But the outside looks pretty tacky. And the other one, they put all that technical into the just shell of the thing, but not into how the thing works and everything like that. Now, if I put these two cars on the market, yeah, right? The second one sells. So that's why we have a problem with it, because we're not used to, it's the inside that's important. We inherently know the inside is important, but when push comes to shove, it's always about the outside. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. So that's the, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, you can only do how good you can. Right? But still there's a question why the Joneses have more. Yeah. I always wonder why it's the Joneses, not the Goldbergs. You know. Because they're the guys that have more, right? You ever heard of any Joneses with more? Right, yeah, okay. Oh, I see. Okay, yes, yes. Okay, that's something you can relate to, right? You know, he's got the next up lawnmower rather than he has hired gardeners. Okay, yeah, okay. Makes sense. Okay. First he saw a white bedstead, Sesha, illuminated by the jewels atop his hoods. This golden luster of the Lord's body mocked the scene of sunset-enveloped coral mountain peaks, doubly amazing due to the effulgence emanating from the ornaments, garland, etc. on his beautiful form. The Lord raised his lotus feet, offering Brahma blessings. He was bedazzled by the Lord's pleasing face framed with earrings and dazzling lips, distress vanquishing smile, beautiful nose and eyebrows. He saw the fully decorated body of the Lord with valuable jewels and pearls and likened it to a sandalwood forest. Where is this footnote? Oh, it's up there, okay. Imbued with fragrant flowers, branches and vines, Brahma concluded that the mountainous form below was Lord Hari. His garlands were reciting sweet hymns. While glancing over the Lord, he noticed the lake in his navel, which was the source of his lotus seat. Right, so then from there he could see that he went down the lotus, couldn't find anything. But now, that's the point, when the Lord reveals himself, then you see everything. Shloka Anusharana, summary of verses. Verses 1 through 9. Maitreya begins his answers. Verses 10 to 21. The creation continues, Brahma's birth and meditation. Verses 22 to 23. Brahma performs austerities and sees the Lord. Verses 1 to 9. Maitreya begins his answers. In this section, Maitreya glorifies the association of devotees and emphasizes the importance of the Parampara system. The great sage Maitreya thanks Vidura and praises him with reference to his family's glories. The royal dynasty of King Puru is worthy to serve the pure devotees because all the descendants of that family are devoted to the personality of Godhead. You are also born in that family, and it is wonderful that, because of your attempt, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are becoming newer and newer at every moment. Verse 1. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Maitreya said, O Vidura, you have said, convinced that the jiva does not actually suffer loss of knowledge, but not perceiving it directly, I will destroy lack of this realization by service to your lotus feet. O sinless Maitreya, tell me about the causes of this knowledge as described by the devotees. Can a person attain knowledge, bhakti, or renunciation on his own? Srimad Bhagavatam 3, 739 and 18. So, the jiva doesn't actually lose the knowledge, but he doesn't perceive it directly because he's trying to perceive it through the material energy. Right? So that means because at any moment you can access that knowledge, just generally we don't. You know, it's just like you have choice. You can do something, two things. One of them is recommended, one of them is not really recommended. Where do we apply our intelligence? How to figure how the not recommended can be connected to Krishna. You know? You understand? So, still using the material intelligence. The other one, we're in touch with the spiritual intelligence, though we don't take advantage of it. That's all. So the soul still is who they are, just they don't identify in that way. That's the difficulty. So that's why it takes time. We just have to get used to, no, but this is the way it actually works. Because in the beginning we're only seeing the one, the material. But then with time, we are aware of the spiritual. But we still think that the material works great. Even though if it worked great, why are we in Krishna consciousness? Right? We took it up because it didn't work great. But there's still that kind of, you know, how you say?
That's the hope world.
Yeah, that and also, what do you call it, nostalgia?
Oh, yeah.
You know, something, you know? How bad things used to be, you know, whatever it is. You know, so then it just takes time before we're convinced that, no, it doesn't work. Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, Maitreya is saying here, I'm convinced that, but I'm not perceiving it directly. He's convinced of it, but not perceiving it?
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's what's going on here. Yes. He doesn't serve it, but he's not perceiving it, so he'll get the realization of that through devotional service to the Lord's feet. Right? Or here, to his lotus feet, to the spiritual master. You know, as we mentioned before, it's through the spiritual master. Does that make sense? So in other words, we can't philosophically reduce the importance of the spiritual master. Maybe socially we don't like it, and this and that, but the point is all you do is reduce the effectiveness of the devotional process. Because the Lord being one, the personal element is there, but then there's also Paramatma and Brahman elements. So you have the personal, the localized, and the impersonal. All these are functioning. So in the same way, you may or may not appreciate the personality that may be there in the position of guru. But the point is the other two aspects are still functioning. And that, it's not a matter of our like or dislike. You know, we may like or not like the Lord, how He's pervading everything and His laws govern everything, but it really doesn't matter. That's the way it's going to function. Does that make sense?
We say that we're either guided by Guru or our mind.
Basically. And then if you take up these social platitudes, it's the mind. It's not Guru, it's not Krishna. You know, I mean, you get some benefit of this, what is it we mentioned here, the, what was that, the Kala Shakti, the Kala Shakti. You know, otherwise known as Kali, which is Puja is coming up in a few days if anyone wants to take advantage. But. So that's the sad part, is that due to modern identity and ego, we think that we're doing great social work, and that social work is really moving things forward and it's dynamic. But it doesn't move anybody forward. It moves you, yes, it's farther forward than uncivilized life, living out in the forest, you know, with you know, wearing leaves or at best, you know, and whatever it is. But, yeah, but you move forward from that, but that's all the more forward. It's not real. It doesn't have substance. Otherwise, it would have worked thousands of years ago when the Greeks dreamed it up. You know, we're talking about, we're modern. We're talking about stuff 3,000 years old. Now, 3,000 years old can't be called up to date. Right? Does that make sense? Washington's American democracy was based on the Greeks and the Romans. That means 3,000 and 2,000 years old. Right? Because up to 2,000 years ago, the Roman system worked. After that, it had a little problem. You understand? Yes. So what's this modern that people are talking about? Right? The Greeks, they were the only culture at the time that being gay was fine. The Romans didn't really appreciate it. If nobody knew about it, they were tolerant. But if you knew about it, it was not good. So if somebody really wanted to come out of the closet, they just went to Greece.
Yeah.
You know?
So everybody would know what that was about if you moved to Greece.
Yeah, but it's, who cares? You're in Greece, you know, they're in Rome, you know, so, you know, distance, you know, makes things friendly.
Yes. Right?
Appreciate
the distance.
Yes. You understand? So all these things that they're talking about now, I mean, so you look at, you know, okay, women want to be able to go out there and do things. Now the Amazons, what was their position? You know? They were out doing things.
Yeah.
They were managing things, you know. I say. Yeah, what is it? I say. KBTNP. It's the army term.
Okay. I wasn't in the army.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, yes.
In Australia, I took the Google class to the Antiquities Museum, and they had a book about Greece. And the lady was talking about women, and you know, basically she was implying that they were, because their world was in the home, and all the girls put their hand up. She asked what they thought. Oh, it's good that they were protected. And these are like 12-year-old girls talking, and the lady was kind of like, you know, getting uncomfortable because they were saying, oh, it's good that they were protected. And she's like, oh, yeah, you guys are really into protection, aren't you? So yeah, it was interesting that.
Yeah, well, you tell him, it says, everybody's into protection. You want a brick through your front window?
You know? And then she actually said, oh, now they say that they were happy, but in the context of the home. You know, so it was...
Or what's outside the home? Dirty streets and
yeah.
Funky guys in the streets. Yeah, there's a good chance that a poor guy in his little hovel, it was bigger than most people's apartment. Yeah. In other words, we call it a condominium. In Rome, they called it a slum. Like that. Okay, yes. O sinless Maitreya, tell me about the causes of this knowledge as described by the devotees. Can a person attain knowledge, bhakti, or renunciation on his own? Right? So the point is that knowledge, bhakti, and renunciation, none of these things you can get on your own. So even in karma and gyan, these things come because of the element of bhakti. According to Vishwanathachakravarti, oh, we just read that. Okay, thus you have prayed for my association. But according to me, getting your association is most rare, attained by only the greatest amount of good actions. Just by serving persons associated with you, bhakti to the Lord will arise. Praising Vidura in this way, Maitreya rejoices. O Bhatta, by this explanation, he indicates that Vidura agreed to accept this birth for saving Maitreya. Right? So, you know, we're talking about serious spin here, right? You know? So, you know, we're seeing that Nard Muni and all these different personalities, and he comes up and praises them and they spin it. So here we see the same thing. You know, Vidura is coming up and asking all these things, and Maitreya says, yes, just by discussing this with you, I'm being saved. So the Lord, you know, you have taken your birth in this way just to save me, right? So, yeah. The Puru dynasty in which you have appeared has some worthy of service by the devotees, has become worthy of service by the devotees. What is your nature? Among the three forms, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, worshipped according to different mentalities, you have made Bhagavan the chief object of worship. Bhagavat Pradhana. Among the worshippers of Bhagavan, at every moment, in every statement, on every occasion, in every sentence, in every verse, in every chapter, you make the garland of the glories of the Lord become ever fresh. You string together this garland of the Lord's glories just by the thread of your taste. Right? Because if you have taste, then you always look for it. Whatever you have taste for, that's what you always catch and string together. Right? And what you don't have taste for, somehow or another, that's not practical, it's not possible, it's not the real me. You know, all these different things. We all have nice excuses, right? Placing this garland within the casket of your ears and mind, which have condensed attraction, you make it eternally fresh. Your greatness cannot be expressed in words. Right? So then you see naturally, because of this realization, then there's that poetic aspect. It naturally arises. So it's not a separate effort. You know, we don't have to study poetics. It happens naturally. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada writes, Maitreya felt happy to have such glorious company as Vidura. He considered the company of Vidura most desirable because such association can accelerate one's dormant propensities for devotional service. So it's just like Parikshit Maharaj becomes perfect by hearing, and Sukadev by speaking. So, but what's going on is that what is Sukadev speaking? What Parikshit wants to hear. Right? But what is Parikshit hearing? What Sukadev has to say. You know, so that's the thing, is it works both ways. The modern context is everything goes one way. There's the guru and then there's the disciple, right? You know, it's kind of like, you know, you want to check how many disciples the guru has, look on the bottom of a shoe, right? You know, that kind of thing. But the point is that the Vedic system is no, it goes both ways. Both are benefiting. Because the disciple needs to hear to advance, but the guru also wants to hear because he's advanced. Right? And whatever your position, it's always ever increasing. Spiritual is always getting better. Does that make sense? So it's not that it can't improve. Right? There's never a position where one's perfect and there's nothing more. Right? That's modern man thinks like that. He's the perfection of the development of the you know, life form, like that. Well, no, it's just, yeah.
Sometimes it appears that inspiration isn't the same, that the guru is much more inspired than the disciples.
That's there, but that's because he can see what's actually going on. So he sees it by the Lord's grace, then this disciple is here and is discussing Krishna consciousness. So he sees the benefit and he's inspired. While the disciple, not being as advanced, may not see that. So he's not necessarily inspired. If he is inspired, like Vidura is, then, you know, it works very easily. So the more matched it is, the better. That's the whole idea, is that because there's differences in what one focuses on, what one analyzes, how one applies Krishna consciousness in your life, that's why then you choose a spiritual master. Right? Because technically, all the spiritual masters are representing Krishna. So therefore, it doesn't matter technically which one is there. But it's a matter of what areas that you feel comfortable functioning in. That's the same field that the spiritual master can function in. Right? So then that makes a nice match. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if the questions you ask are always too weird, you know, does that make sense? You know, it's like, say you have a, yeah, I mean, that's just not, the lines are becoming too blurred for me to come out with it. Okay, like this. Let's say if you have a, just as an example, you have a alternative guru and you have a cheerleader disciple. It won't work as well. Right? So when they match, then, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, is because the areas of their experience, you can give nice examples that will match. Does that make sense? The way of presentation, the way of, just like, let's say for example, someone speaks very boldly. Now some people, they appreciate that. But other people, they don't like that. Then you have another guru, he speaks very gently, very cultured and all that. Now, then other, they appreciate that. But then someone else is kind of like, it takes too long to get to the point. You know? Like that. So, like this, then you choose how... Does that make sense?
Yeah. So can we say it's not about tattva as it is, it's about rasa?
Yes. That's all, because ultimately it's about the personal, you're cultivating the personal. But because we have put so much on the external, therefore the tattva element is what is going to awaken us to the reality of the actual relationship, of the personal relationship with the Lord. That's why it says that up to liberation, then the knowledge is important, but after liberation, it's not. Because then it's about rasa. Right? Tattva is only describing the science of rasa. Right? But the thing is that there's no tasting of it. We're discussing it. So the taste is the intellectual, the knowledge of it, the clarity of it, the understanding of it. But it's not that we're appreciating the taste that's there. Like we're appreciating that, you know, about the position of Vidura and how he has surrendered to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master is appreciating the qualification of the disciple. And both of them see that from this conversation there's going to be great benefit for both of them. But the taste that they're getting in that, that's not what we're necessarily acquiring. Means if we are, great, you know, because one can, one has, then from the first verse of the Bhagavatam, one can taste that. But it's expected, or it's understood, if you don't have, then like that, there we have, you know, until the end of the ninth canto to kind of generate that. You know, and it's hoped that by the tenth canto, then one will have that, because then you can really appreciate what's there. You know, just like, let's say, there's a big special program, you know, like a wedding reception or something, and you walk through and see all the nice arrangements of the food and the decorations and everything like that. You're appreciating, but you're not tasting. Does that make sense? So that's the difference, is that the people who are there, they're tasting, but the people who are managing it, they're only appreciating. You know, it's there, it says these are nice things, and that, okay, they're liking that, they're liking this, oh, there's a problem over there, you know. So, does that make sense?
Yes.
So, the technical makes us aware that there's the personal. Because otherwise we think the only personal is ourselves. And everything else is external to that. Yes. Right, you know. like that. You know, so we will appreciate that, no, there are other living entities, right? And so then it's about living entity to living entity, personal to personal. And the external is just simply in support of that. So that, therefore, the aspect. So we start simple, because otherwise the technical, we're not used to that. But once that faith is there in that, then we can become more technical. The only necessity of the technical is because our material conditioning is technical. So, does that make sense? So, sometimes this is an interesting contradiction. The person that's materially more sophisticated is complaining about the technicality of the philosophy. But they're the one that requires it. The simple person where Krishna's God, I'm his servant, and he's engaged in his service, he doesn't need the technical. And he's not complaining. He'll just say, I don't understand, that's over my head. You understand? That's the problem. It's who it's for. They can't digest it. Or won't even agree to take it. Right? You know, it's just like the person with jaundice. He takes the rock candy, he says it's bitter. So what's his conclusion? Don't eat it. Like that. You know, because he thinks that's how it works. Well, the simpler person, the doctor says, eat it, it's bitter, he does what he's told, and he gets the benefit. He follows authority. So that's the thing. When the mind becomes the authority, then there's a problem. Because the mind's been the authority since time immemorial, and it hasn't worked out so good so far. So
I've experienced also sometimes those, I would say, need the technical. They take it, but they just make it mundane. So they just use it as something to just discuss on, like they would discuss on anything else.
Yeah, but in any case, it's just, it's not being applied with the proper faith and understanding. Yeah. So that's why he makes that point here, is that can a person attain knowledge, bhakti, or renunciation on his own? Yeah. So that's the thing, is that one can't. Right. So here it says, he considered the company of Vidura most desirable because such association can accelerate one's dormant propensities for devotional service. So that's the thing, it's dormant. It hasn't gone away, because if we say it's gone away, that means it's not dormant. Right? The point is no, it's dormant there. It's just a matter of awakening it. But one will awaken it in the association of the devotees. That's where it gets awoken. You have that aspect because it's like this, is that you have to feel confident that you can actually do something for the person. Right? Does that make sense? Let's say you're running a mechanic shop and they bring in some electronics. What do you tell them? Yeah, go to the next shop. They do electronics. Does that make sense? So it means, in other words, what it is that you can work with, then that's what's comfortable. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's all. So it's just a matter of, because how you'll speak, what examples you'll give, what methods you'll take to get there, what applications, then there should be some commonality. It's not that what is being said isn't of spiritual value, it's just that one cannot take advantage of it. But it's a relationship. See, the whole point is there's never any loss here. The difficulty comes is because we think Diksha Guru is the one and only absolute and there is nothing else. But the point is someone who you think would be a Diksha Guru, if they don't feel comfortable in that relationship, they remain a Siksha Guru. So the point to get from the Guru is instruction. And if you feel you can take advantage, then Siksha Guru it remains. Then you find someone else to be the Diksha Guru. The point is there should be gurus. And of that, one is a Diksha Guru. But Siksha Gurus, there'll be many. There's no limit. So there's never a loss that, oh, he didn't become my guru, I felt so devastated. No, they remain as a Siksha Guru. Whatever level you saw them as guru remains. It just doesn't become formalized as Diksha. So there's never any loss. It's only because of the neophyte mentality, we think that Diksha Guru is the only guru and everybody else is something else. You can even hear the word.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Does that work? Does that make sense? So there is no loss. It is a dynamic process. It always works. The whole point is it's just who is the Diksha Guru. Does that make sense? You know, the point of the Diksha Guru is that you will keep focused, because we tend to not be focused. If one thing doesn't work out the way you want, we go to the next. You know, it's just like the kid goes and asks the daddy for something and it doesn't work, then what does he do? Goes and asks the mommy. Right? If that doesn't work, then you go to the grandparents. You know, you just keep going until you get the answer you want. Right? In a sense, so because of that propensity, that's why there's a Diksha Guru. Because on the liberated platform, you don't have that problem. So whoever is the Siksha Guru is the Diksha Guru. Does that make sense? So you don't have a difficulty there.
Which means commitment.
Yeah, it's just there's natural commitment to the liberated soul. The conditioned soul, there's varying degrees. So therefore, there's a Diksha Guru. Because you know there is someone there who, you know, if things go funny, that, you know, they're responsible. Right? The Siksha Guru, you may, you know, just the Siksha Guru, you know. Does that make sense? That's the reason for it, because we're conditioned. Does that make sense? So there's never any loss. In other words, all the persons that were guru when you joined and you look up to, with time, generally one of them becomes a Diksha Guru. But technically it doesn't matter which one. Right? It's whichever one works. Does that make sense? Yes, so that's why it doesn't matter. But at the same time, as they are people, so that personal relationship, that's what's important. So the relationship remains with whoever it is, whether they become the Diksha Guru or not. Right? And also you're saying that the disciple can take advantage, that's take advantage in what they understand, but the guru may understand other areas that are in need and they can't address those. Or don't, you know, or it's just not something that they're comfortable addressing.
So how about if you accept your Diksha Guru as Diksha Guru, but his teachings you're not so, you know, because I have my Siksha Gurus over here.
No, it has to be proper. It's because generally you pick the Diksha Guru as the prominent Siksha Guru. And if he's not, generally that has to be worked out with the Guru. It's understood that others might be more prominent in Siksha. But then, because they're the Diksha Guru, that's the formality, so then what they say, well, you know, this is what they expect. As long as that's done, then it all works out. It's personal, you can work it out. Right?
But always he's the authority.
He's the authority. You know, so he may be the authority that someone else is the authority, but still he's the authority for them.
Giving him.
Yeah.
Can you say that the Siksha Gurus, they are... helping the Diksha Guru?
Yes, they're helping. They help.
It's the same mood.
Yes. Okay.
Also the aspect of representing Mala and Moha.
Yes, that's also awesome. Yeah, because the connection is there. So that means everything's proper in its place, but then the application of that, and that's Govindaji. So that's the instruction of the Diksha Guru and the instruction of the Siksha Guru. Okay, so we'll break here for a few minutes. We're discussing the real meaning of suffering.
It came up.
Okay.
How can this show? can we know this word?
How can I know this word?
He also knows it.
Two spoken French words outside of France, but apparently inside France, but I don't say much.
Really?
One time you must come to France.
I told you once I was supposed to come, but I got kidnapped by the Polish mafia.
We are going to Orange.
Okay. Okay. Then the sage begins his reply to Vidura's question asked in chapter 7. Quote, "Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana, which is directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead, for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries, for the sake of very little pleasure." Okay, that sums it up. Entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Yeah, okay. Maitreya reminded Vidura that he is speaking the Bhagavat Purana, which he received from a disciplic succession that extends back to the time when Lord Sankarsana spoke it to the four Kumaras. At that time, Lord Sankarsana was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. Yes.
He didn't refer you back to Lord Brahma, who got it from.
No, he went through Kumaras here. So this is a different line. Yeah. Because the point is, as long as it's the Vaishnav line.
So that's his line, you presume?
Yeah, one would expect that he's coming in the Kumara Sampradaya. Yeah. Because see, up to a particular point, all Vaishnavas are saying the same thing. It's just that how far they want to take. So if you're going up to Majesty, you'll go up to one point. If you want to go up to Lower Goloka, that's another point. But if you want to go to Braj, then that's a further point. Right? Does that make sense? So like that.
I mean. And this distinction is from the very top of the beginning of the Sampradaya.
It is, but the Sampradayas can handle all these different aspects. But the point is that the Gaudiyas is then a unique. So it's like within the four Sampradayas, but it's almost like a fifth.
Yes.
You know, it's just like there's four Sampradaya commentaries, then there's the Gaudiya. Because it's bringing together all those. So for us, we can relate to all of them. You know, and generally, depending on how you're presenting it, they can relate to what we're speaking about. Now, whether they relate to each other, that's another thing. Because whatever they're talking, Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, Vishishta Dwait, Dwaita Dwait, that's already in our philosophy.
Yes.
So we have something common ground to talk on. But amongst themselves, then there'll be maybe differences of opinion.
Manusha and Madhvacharya are not exactly...
Yes, it's there because, see, Madhva has to rule out any... See, in other words, you've already converted so many persons by the understanding of what's real oneness.
Yes.
But some are left, holding on to the aspect of oneness. So, therefore, to cut it off that they can't use that as an excuse, you just say, no, there's only two.
Yes.
Because we see when Madhvacharya is talking about the spiritual realm, actual Vaikuntha, then he's talking about that same oneness.
Yes.
But other than that, he never mentions it. Other than in Vaikuntha. In the pastimes of Vaikuntha, he mentions it. But within the material world, it's not even the point of discussion. So it's just a preaching tactic that must be used to defeat whatever are the most stubborn of the impersonalists. Right? In other words, those who are more inquisitive, they'll be caught by Ramanuja. Those who are, you know, more stubborn, then that's who Madhva catches them. So there's not a problem between them.
No.
Disciples will make that up,
yes.
But that's generally that's the difficulty. The neophytes always create these disturbances between this guru, that guru, and something like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the point is that still we know what our line is. Just because we're happy to hear from whoever we're hearing from doesn't mean we don't know where our line is. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you go to a family reunion and you're meeting friends and relatives and you know, all kinds of, you know, aunts, uncles and grandparents and cousins and, you know, like this. But it doesn't mean you don't know who your parents are. Otherwise, how do you relate? How are you second cousin to this person if you don't know who your parent is? Because if your parent's not this person, you may not be second cousins. They may be your uncle or your niece, or they may be first cousins, or they may be your brother and sister, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it all depends upon that. So your position is by what your parentage is. Right, so we're Gaudiyas, and so therefore, then in dealing with everyone else, they're Vaishnavas, so we appreciate them. But at the same time, as we still have our view. Does that make sense? Yeah. Here also, it's interesting is that he's speaking, meditating on Lord Sankarsana, but he says who the learned esteem is Vasudev. Right? Because the point is Lord Vishnu is just Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva are just four different flavors of the one same person. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. 1-4. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 28. Although Lord Vasudeva and Lord Aniruddha are equal in all respects, Lord Aniruddha sometimes devotedly meditates on Lord Vasudeva. To argue that this is contradicted by the Shruti Shastra is wrong. For the Supreme Lord, who is the source of all incarnations, and for all his expansions, there are gradations of higher and lower. This is confirmed in Bhagavatam. So there are expansions, but there's gradations of higher and lower. That doesn't mean more or less transcendental. It just means how much potency he's manifesting. You know, a good amount of unlimited or a lot of unlimited. You know, but it makes a difference in flavor. That's the whole thing. There'll be a difference in flavor between Sankarshan and Aniruddha. But Aniruddha has come from Sankarsha. Therefore, they'll be.
Yes.
Okay, then quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam 3:8-4. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumara, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly like you about the truths regarding Vasudeva, the supreme from Lord Sankarsana, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. At that time, Lord Sankarsana was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. Right. So he's saying that he wants to inquire about it, and Sankarsana is meditating. So you're hearing from the Lord about the position of the Lord. Yes. This verse clearly states that Lord Vasudeva is superior to Lord Sankarsana. These gradations of higher and lower do not refer to Krishna. The phrase Krishna's too, but Krishna separates him from them. Right? This is the one place where you do use the but. Right? Okay, separates him from them. Krishna is then declared to be Bhagavan Swayam, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's all these incarnations, but Krishna is different because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
They're comparing
him
here to
Sankarsana
Vasudeva?
Who?
Who's speaking this verse?
Who's speaking some time ago?
Yeah, this verse clearly states.
Oh, that's Jiva Goswami.
So
this is all in Anucheda 28 of the Krishna Sandarbha.
So he's comparing, when he says Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, he speaks precisely about Sankarsana, Aniruddha, Vasudeva.
But he's saying that means he's saying that these forms they may be devoted to each other, but he's saying Krishna's in another category. Because all these others, there's gradations. Like you have Swamsa, then they expand again, then that's another Swamsa. So they have even less. That's why it's called portion, plenary portion. Right? Plenary portion is a full portion, but it's a portion of a plenary portion. You know, it's a full portion of a full portion, but it's still, you know, in gradation will be seemingly less. We're only putting less because then we can relate to the mood. But it's just like if you have unlimited of unlimited and a little less of unlimited, it's still unlimited. However you put it. I have unlimited, right? Then I have unlimited to the 10th. Or unlimited to the 11th.
A lot of unlimited.
Yeah, you know, so I'm saying it's just a little bit more or less this way or that way. So it's just for our appreciation. Because the reason he does that is then in that particular situation to show that particular mood, then that aspect is there. So for that situation, he only has to apply this much of his potencies or his personality. So it's perfect for the situation. But it's not as much as in another situation. Is that something? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Krishna is in his own category. All these other expansions are all in this category of who's higher and lower and who's expanded from who. And therefore who's devoted to who. But Krishna is the original. So he's in his own category because he's the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're all personality of Godhead, but there's the original personality of Godhead. Maitreya Muni explains that he heard the Bhagavatam from his spiritual master, Parasara Muni, who had heard it from Shankyayana Muni, who had heard it directly from the four Kumaras. And Lord Sankarsana was the original speaker in the succession of Bhagavatam recitation. So now this is at least in the Bhagavatam recitation in the line. Now whether he's initiated in that line, that's another thing. But does that make sense? But this is who he's heard. You know, just like Arjuna, he has a weapon. And, you know, they ask about, the Gandharva asks about the weapon. He says he's gotten this from Agni Vesh, who got it from this one, who got it from this one, who originally got it from Agni himself. Right? So they show the line, so then people appreciate the connection. Five through nine. Srila Prabhupada, purport to verse 8, says, this is the way of the Parampara system. Although Sanat Kumara, the well-known great saintly Kumara, was in the perfect stage of life, still he heard the message of Srimad Bhagavatam from Lord Sankarsana. Similarly, when he was questioned by Shankyayana Rishi, he spoke to him the same message he had heard from Lord Sankarsana. Right? So, means what we're getting here is even though he's in the perfect stage of life, that's one is there, but we have to remember is that he is who? Do you remember? Sanat Kumar?
Cupid.
Hmm? Cupid, but the original. So he's actually Prajumna. Right? The expansion as the demigod, now he's an empowered living entity. So here you have Prajumna hearing from Sankarsan, you know, who's meditating on and will explain about Vasudeva. You know, and the Acharyas put in Aniruddha, he's meditating on Sankarsana. Right? Because Aniruddha, Prajumna and Aniruddha are from Sankarsana. And Sankarsana is from Vasudeva. Similarly, when he was questioned by Shankyayana Rishi, he spoke to him the same message he had heard from Lord Sankarsana. In other words, unless one hears from the proper authority, one cannot become a preacher. In devotional service, therefore, two items out of the nine, namely, hearing and chanting, are most important. Because how do you chant if you haven't heard?
Yes.
Right? You know, we're not talking about, you know, tongues here or channeling. You know, we're talking about, you know, proper connection here. Without hearing nicely, one cannot preach the message of Vedic knowledge. So that's why one studies, one hears, because then one can speak.
Yes.
But whatever one has heard, one can speak. So even if one's heard less, yes, you can speak that. Because the point is it's Krishna, it's perfect, yes, and it's fully potent.
Like that. Yes.
So it's not about, well, until I know everything, I can't preach. No. If we've heard from bona fide authority, whatever you do know, because you're a devotee, right? You've only understood that much, but you're a devotee. So technically it only requires that much to become a devotee. Right? Now to develop with devotional service, you study more. You hear more. But that's enough to be able to tell someone else, and they'll become a devotee. Right? But to progress, they'll need to hear more. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why we always have to be careful. We can't limit the... It's not a matter of social prestige and stuff, these things. It's a matter of actual spiritual potency. Next, Srila Prabhupada explains how Parasara got blessings to speak to Puranas from the sage Pulastya. The great sage of the name Pulastya is the father of all demoniac descendants. Once upon a time, Parasara began a sacrifice in which all the demons were to be burnt to death because his father had been killed and devoured by one of them. Okay, good reason. Okay. Can't complain. The great sage Vasishtha Muni arrived at the sacrifice and requested Parasara to stop the deadly action. And because of Vasishtha's position and respect in the community of sages, Parasara could not deny the request. Right, because here Vasishtha is one of the sons of Brahma, so he's, you know, and one of the Prajapatis. Mm-hmm. While Parasara is a literary incarnation. He's a Vyasadev. Right, so then, as we said in the hierarchy, you know, there's some position there, like that. So he's a sage. While here's the Brahmarshi. So on the social level, is there, right? Though, technically, because Vyasadeva represents Vishnu, it's the other way, but socially you would look at it that he's the junior. Right? Just like Krishna is the junior to Arjuna because they're moon dynasty and Arjuna's sun dynasty. Right? Like that. Parasa, having stopped the sacrifice, Pulastya, the father of the demons, appreciated his Brahminical temperament and gave the blessings that in the future he would be a great speaker on the Vedic literatures called the Puranas, the supplements of the Vedas, right? Because he could have said, no, no, I'm doing this, right? And then what can you do? But he followed the etiquette and everything. So yes?
Isn't that Sutta who's speaking the Puranas?
But he has to hear it from somewhere.
Also hear it from Marsha. He was the original.
Means, in other words, the speaker of the Puranas will have to hear from the Vyas. And so then it's natural that the Vyas would be good at the Puranas. Does that make sense? Because in other words, Vyasadeva gives the responsibility of disseminating a particular branch of this knowledge to a particular person. But it's not that he is not expert in all of them, because he's compiled them, so he has to know them. But his duty is to compile them. Then it's his disciples' duty to then disseminate them. So Sutta is then who disseminates the Puranas. Does that work?
So Parasara was before Sutta, after Vyasadeva, more or less.
No, Parasara is Vyasadeva. Who's also a Vyasadeva. Does that make sense? Now, he was the Vyasadeva either in the previous or the one before.
Oh,
Kali Yuga.
About the position.
Yeah, no, he's the father, but the position was he's also Vyas. But I can't remember if he's this. I think he's the last, but
so, two before.
He's two before. So that's the thing, is that there's Vyas, and so that Vyas is called Parasara. And this Vyas is called Krishna Dvaipayana. So that's how you know it. Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas or Parasara Vyas. Okay? And Ajamil is going to be the either next or the one after next. You know? No, Ashwatthama, excuse me, Ashwatthama. Does that make sense? So he'll be the next one. So now he'll be Ashwatthama Vyas. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Parasara's action was appreciated by Pulastya because Parasara had forgiven the demons out of his brahminical power of forgiveness. Parasara was able to demolish all the demons in the sacrifice, but he considered, demons are so made that they devour living creatures, men and animals. But why on that account should I withdraw my brahminical qualification of forgiveness? Right? It means he's going to get rid of them because of their bad behavior. But just because they do that doesn't mean that he should not function on his brahminical prowess of forgiveness. Right? In other words, he's a Brahmin. He's supposed to forgive. They're demons. They're supposed to devour everybody. You know, so everybody's doing their duties. Yes. Right? You know. As a great speaker of the Puranas, so Pulastya appreciated that. Because it wasn't just, he just did it and then was feeling grumbly about it. He thinks, okay, yes, then why, I should do my duty as a Brahmin. And then, you know, they'll do their duty as demons. Yeah. As the great speaker of the Puranas, Parasara first of all spoke on the Srimad Bhagavat Purana, because it is the foremost of all the Puranas. Maitreya Muni desired to narrate the same Bhagavatam he had heard from Parasara. And Vidura was qualified to hear it because of his faithfulness and his following the instructions received from superiors. So this ability to appreciate and work with authority, that's very important. So that's Vidura's qualification. Because of that, then he's able to receive the Bhagavatam like that. Does that make sense? So that's why this principle of authority is there, and that goes throughout. You have the guru, you have the managerial, you have on the social level. Right, you have all these different things. You have the Shastra.
So this only accepting Prabhupada's authority, that's a weakness.
That's a weakness. But at least they're accepting one.
There's, yeah.
So there's that. That's a spark. That's something to fan. So that side of it's good, but that they can't accept anybody else, that's the weakness. And it will impact their spiritual development. You know? Like that. But it doesn't mean that because of that faith that they still won't go back to Godhead. It just means that they'll have to do more development in the spiritual world than they would if they had done it here. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's all. Because the natural thing is you just do a progression where that stops. When you leave your body, you progress from there. So if they haven't progressed so far, they have to do more there. But in any case, it's made up. It works out, you know. So one doesn't have to worry. But the point is it doesn't help the development of one's own and others' consciousness here, like that.
Yes.
You know, like that. So Srimad Bhagavatam was being narrated from time immemorial by the succession, even before the time of Vyas. The so-called historians calculate the Puranas to be only a few hundred years old. But factually, the Puranas existed from time immemorial, before all historical calculations by the mundaners and speculative philosophers. So the Puranas being the fifth supplement, they're always there. If the Veda's there, then the supplements are always there. So all the Vedic literature is eternally present.
Yes.
Just whether, but it gets compiled at the beginning of Kali Yuga, so that the living entities in Kali Yuga, then due to lack of memory, then can go back and get some benefit. Right? Otherwise, the problem is that it has to just be heard orally. Then I'll forget most of it, and then when I speak to you, you forget most of that. And then the last guy says, well, there's something about Krishna. I don't know what, but there's something that Krishna sticks in my mind. Yeah, it has something with a K. Yeah, and then the next guy says, there's some alphabetical letter I think is there. So, you know, so it just keeps getting...
Krishna, by the way, says, Krishna, too. Me and
Which is the two, yeah.
Then you get these in the West who say that, I believe in something. Maybe that's what happened.
I believe in something.
Yeah, do you hear it?
What? I don't know.
I don't
something.
There's
a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's... There's something out there.
The thing.
Yes. Verses 10 to 21. That's not nice to say about your relatives. The creation continues. Brahma's birth and meditation. In this section, suddenly we are continuing with the description of the creation, which was halted at the end of the sixth chapter. Right? Because then it's all the exchange between them, the discussions, further questions. Having shown how the Bhagavatam started from Sankarsana, Maitreya now begins the story. Right now, it's natural. Why Sankarsana? Sambandha. Yes. Okay. Very good. And then, some other aspect. What is Sankarsana very famous for?
Inspiration.
Inspiration. That's more of a prajumna.
Attracting.
Okay. Yeah. Attracting by the Lord's pastimes. Just say because of the noise, all I could hear was gefilte. The field of activity, okay. Yeah, I was just thinking, what's with the gefilte? Okay, let's try it here. A step back. Sankarsan Ananta. Ananta, thousands of mouths. Thousands of mouths are... Describing the glories of the Lord. So in other words, Sankarsana would be the authority on Bhagavatam. Because he's the one... That's what he does, is just describe the Lord's glories constantly. So it's natural if you're hearing from Sankarsana, then you're hearing it, you know, from the... How do you say
it? They said that he just opened his eyes to answer their questions. With the Kumaras.
So it's easier. If someone opens their eyes, you focus more.
What about talking constantly describing the noise of
the Lord? He only has to discuss enough for them. And began to speak.
Constantly?
No, how much they need to hear. Because the point is Bhagavatam is unlimited. So it's just how much is required for the realization of your particular audience. You know, it's like 18,000 verses is given to... Is what Vyasa compiled, but it's much bigger than that. But that's a good size for us to. It keeps us busy for a lifetime, you know. So it's we're you know. But since Ananta's eternal, therefore his Bhagavatam's a bit bigger. Yes. Oh, I mean, you're taking that. Is that side what's represented? Yes, you could say that. Right. In other words, there's the knowledge, the attitude, you know, the understanding, the application. Those are allocations. Then you have the aspect of where the devotion, the actual, that devotional mood. That's the one that comes from Radharani's side. Right? So you require both, because the spiritual master represents both. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's there, is that you have the devotional attitude and then you have the knowledge and forms of it. You know what I'm saying? So we're not talking about the rasik aspect of the particular kind of devotional service, therefore coming from Balaram's side or Radharani's side. We're talking about the principle of the, you know, of the internal potency, or, you know, the Lord and the position of knowledge. Does that make sense? Yeah. Maitreya narrates how Garbhodakshayi Vishnu lay upon Ananta on the universal waters for 4,000 yuga cycles, until the time was proper for the creation. By the power of time, an effulgent stem sprouted from Vishnu's navel. A lotus bloomed from the stem. The Lord entered the lotus as supersoul, impregnating it with the modes of material nature. From this lotus, Brahmadev appeared, quote, just like the strength of fire within fuel wood. The Lord remained within the water of dissolution, submerging all the living entities in their subtle bodies. He lay in this self-invigorated energy called Kala, right? So they're still in that mood of destruction because they're not manifest their forms yet. So that's the aspect of where the Lord is known as Tamasi, right? Because it's through that ahankar that this whole creation is established, right? So that, therefore there's the devastation is still there. But self-invigorating Kala means time, because the time is what then makes everything happen, right? So the form here then is Kali, right? So it's the material time. But in the spiritual world, you have the transcendental time. Does that make sense? So he deals with his internal potency, but she is transformed as the external, and therefore these things happen. Right? The Lord lay down for 4,000 yuga cycles in his internal potency, right? Not in external, right? So therefore the time element, he's dealing with transcendental time. But the expansion of that, then the material time, is what's making all this go on. And by his external energy, he appeared to be sleeping within the water. Right? So he's inspired with the internal energy, but from the external, it looks like he's sleeping.
Within the water means floating on top?
Yes. Yes. No, this is means, that was, means, it's like, where's the boat? It's within the ocean, like that. So that would mean there you're using the lakshana, you know, form. What do you call it? Shakti. No, abhida would be direct, and lakshana would be the indirect, the poetic.
So we use the...
No, just in that one, that for that, saying within the water, that's lakshana. Because then he's, you know, on the water. He's not actually inside, you know. Yeah, he's not submerged, yeah. But still, you know, for us, when we say in the water, we mean next to the water, or on the water, we mean next to the water. So I guess what it means is here is when you say on the water, then you mean next to the water, on the bank. When you say in the water, you mean actually on the water.
When you say under the water...
Then that means in the water.
Yes.
When the Lord, living entities were coming out for further development of their fruit of activities, right? Because they had the fruit of activities, the universe ends. So then their development of the fruit of actions finish. Or let's say they're stopped. So now they've come and they're sitting in the lotus, and then again they will come out and then... Okay. When the living entities were coming out for further development of their fruit of activities... Actuated by the energy called Kala Shakti, he saw his transcendental body as bluish. Right? Because then also, as that means, what's going to happen is there's you're interacting. So that means there's the aspect of rasa. Right?
At this point or later?
No, but it's the principle. These living entities are being separated, so now we're talking about relationship. Rasa. Now they're in ignorance because they're under the Kala Shakti. Right? So being in false ego, therefore they don't understand the relationship with the Lord. But the point is they're interacting with the Lord. Everything, the universal form, is all they're interacting with. And the universal form is the Lord. But they're only seeing the external form of the universal form. They're not seeing the Lord in his internal potency.
You said some time ago, you said that by being in contact directly with the Lord being in something, they're getting purified, jivas.
No, they're getting, you'd say, not necessarily purified, they're getting inspired, like after a good sleep. Like if you're tired, you go to bed, you wake up tired, you're not inspired. If you're tired, you go to bed, you wake up refreshed. So that's it. It's a total, you know, deep sleep, no dreams. So then they're fully refreshed, ready for another universe of mundane activities.
What was it? Incredible amount of work for very little pleasure.
Yeah, incredible amount of work for very little pleasure. Yeah. Yeah, it's not even just a lot of work for a very little pleasure, but an incredible amount, right? Yeah? Because that's the soul wants to be happy, so it only notices that little and not the incredible amount of work. So that's what we're saying, is for that incredible amount of work, you should get a bit more. But you can only get that bit more if you connect to the Lord. Then, from an incredible amount of work, you get an incredible amount of happiness. Yeah, so that's the problem with the material. You put in the same effort, and you get back extremely little.
And then those who suffer from depression, they see it correctly, just don't see the bright part of it?
They partly see it, but partly don't. Means, in other words, if one's in depression, one's seeing the facts. But one is not actually seeing the soul. Otherwise, the point is, those are the facts. I'm the soul. Therefore, I can't be happy by this. But they're still identifying that I'm the controller and enjoyer. And so since I cannot enjoy in this situation, therefore all is lost. But actually, nothing's lost, because it never was enjoyable in the first place.
It has nothing to lose. Has nothing to lose.
Yeah. You know, I say it's like a combination of, you know, you have those, like the cliche yogi's nail bed, but it's one of these more modern, where it's also a vibrator bed. You know. So it was never meant to be happy on. But somehow or another, if I lie this way, or maybe there, or I got an itch in the back at that part, you know, so well, that's good, you know. You understand, yeah. Yeah, I wonder if those would sell. The subtle subject matter of creation, on which the Lord's attention was fixed, was agitated by the material mode of passion, and thus the subtle form of creation pierced through his abdomen. Piercing through, the sum total form of the fruit of activity of the living entities took the shape of a bud of a lotus flower generated from the personality of Vishnu, and by his supreme will it illuminated everything like the sun and dried up the vast waters of devastation. So that here so this is the Virat aspect, but we still see it's the Lord.
Yes.
Right? So that's. Before that we call that Hiranyagarbha, where all the elements are separated, and you have those archetypical. Okay, that's better. Archetypical.
Nothing to do with the
Arctic.
Nothing to do with the Arctic.
So no animals. Noah's not the authority in the archetypical. You know, yeah, that's a standard ark. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
a soft one.
Archetypical. We're doing something about it. I would get into that in the first place.
The Virat.
The Virat.
The Vrindagarbha.
Okay, yeah, so then, yeah, the demigods, okay. Those original demigods. The archetypical.
Yes.
And so then, that's all in the primary creation. That's Hiranyagarbha. Right? Then, now, that whole thing now, driven by, agitated by the mode of passion. And thus the subtle form pierced through his abdomen. Then this creates the sum total of form of fruit of activities of a living entity. Right? That comes as the lotus flower. No. Vyakta would have been... Vyakta is the stage between the Lord's glance and when the Mahatattva becomes conscious.
So
yes. Yeah. But once the lotus flower, now that's Virat. So that's that next stage. Because technically, you could count it as two, Hiranyagarbha and Chaturmukha Brahma, because all of that is just the Lord's creations, the primary creation. So there's the glance, the impregnation, then the, gestation, then the consciousness, the Vasudev Sattva, right? Then the demigods and all, then the bringing everything together with Sankarshan. And then up to that point, now then it's ready for the living entities, the meditation of the Lord on the, and that aspect of the universal form. Now, through the mode of passion, then the fruit of activities of the living entity then burst forth as the lotus coming from the Lord's navel. So all that you could count as this, but they're making a distinction because here, then this is already, the living entities are there and ready for a new kalpa.
Yes.
Right.
Maharaj, is there a division there with two aspects of sambandha, just the field itself and then the desire to engage?
You could, yeah. You probably could say like that. Yeah, so sankarshan and then prajumna aspect. And dried up the waters of devastation. So whatever was there is devastation from before. The waters that had come up high, now those went, and so now then you can have the recreation, or Brahma's secondary creation. Because these are, yeah. Into that universal lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the Supersoul. Because otherwise, even though you have all the living entities, and their desires and all the aggregate things, how will it function unless the Lord enters it as Supersoul? Right? So in other words, you could say is that the Hiranyagarbha aspect, I mean, on that side is Mahavishnu, on this side is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu as the Supersoul. But then within the actual functioning of what we work with, that would be Kirodakshaya Vishnu.
Yes.
Right? And when it was thus impregnated with all the modes of material nature, the personality of Vedic wisdom, whom we call the self-born, was generated. Right, so then, now he's impregnated with the modes of nature. Before it was with his glance, which is Sankarsana, time, and the living entities. Right? So that makes your primary creation. Right? You know, the main part. But now when you get to this aspect of the Virat, now the modes of nature have been injected.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti's purport to verse 14 states, the material element, transforming into a lotus bud by time, stood above the waters of devastation by the force of the awakened karmas of the jivas. But it's the Lord awakens them. So it's not that they all decided, you know, got out their placards and say, hey, we want to wake up here, you know, so. The lotus bud had Vishnu, Atma, as its source. It was like the sun, illuminated by its effulgence. It did not depend on the sun to light up the water.
Right, it's already effulgent, so it doesn't require, because the sun hasn't been created yet.
Yes.
But everything's all illuminated, and from this, now Brahma can see.
Right? Okay, probably stop here because then we get into the Sundarbha quote.